Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and Packers News. I am Ryan Wood alongside my co-host, Tom Silverstein. And Tom, the NFC North basically said, no, this is not going to be a 17-game season. This is going to be a 16-game season. Everyone's going to start from scratch this week because everyone in the NFC North is 0-1. Where do the Packers go from here from after this 38-3 blowout loss in Jacksonville against the Saints?
Yeah, I guess you would rank the division by degree of defeat. So the Packers would definitely be in last place in regards to that. Detroit was harder. So maybe these are the two worst teams in the division for right now. I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know what happened in New Orleans, that this was who they were and that they don't have any chemistry and something's off with them. And Detroit plays them tough. I expect it to be a close game. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. I know the Packers are good at rebounding after big losses or tough losses, but I think the Packers are not starting out at the spot that everyone thought they were going to start out which was picking up at the end of last year.
Well, you're right. 38-3 is really, really hard to beat when it comes to worst losses in the division. It's just five touchdowns against a Saints team that doesn't have Drew Brees, but in fact has Jameis Winston at quarterback, is what nobody expected. Tom, I would never say that a week two game is a must win. I've seen Aaron Rodgers carry a Packers team that had a much less talented defense than this one from 4-6 to the NFC Championship game. So week two is not a must win. With that said, this feels as close to a must win as you can possibly get in week two, because for one, you want to put last week behind you. If you're the Packers, whatever 38-3 was, you want to leave that in week one and not let that compound into week two. For two, the Lions, yes, they play the Packers tough historically, but they also went about the length of the Stone Age not long ago without beating the Packers in the state of Wisconsin. And this game is at Lambeau Field in prime time. And oh, by the way, a West Coast trip on a short week lingers or looms into week three at San Francisco. So if you lose this game, you're very possibly staring at 0-3 start, which nobody had coming for this team. So it's not a must win, Tom. I would never say that this is a must win, but it feels as close to a must win game as you can get in late September.
Yeah. Well, you can't keep losing NFC games. That's the key. And you definitely can't lose division games, but you know, if that first game had been against an AFC opponent, you could write it off. And even if they lost this one, you could probably say, all right, it's not the end of the world, but losing two NFC games is going to, you know, right off the bat, it's going to affect your playoff status, assuming you do make the playoffs at the end of the year. So they just can't, you know, that's why these three games are so important to start the season. They're NFC games, and they're games against teams that, you know, have a say in where the Packers are going to finish, both in the division and in the NFC. So I think it is, you know, I don't know about must wins. Must wins are at the end of the year when you absolutely need them to get into the playoffs. But this is a game where they just got to play well. I mean, more than anything, they need to play well.
And they're going to have to do it against the Lions team that they should beat, first of all. But, you know, when you look at Detroit, a team that is in constant disarray, and here they are again with a new head coach. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Dan Campbell, he goes into his second game. His first game, very up and down. I mean, look, they lost 41-33 to the San Francisco 49ers at home, but they were down 38-10 at one point. And that is a score that Matt LaFleur has told his team about, and he's stressed this Lions team, it's going to be a tough out, and they're a team that is resilient. They showed resiliency coming back against the 49ers and making it a game at the end. What did you make of what Detroit showed in week one?
You know, I didn't get to watch it but from everything I read, they looked terrible in the first half and probably weren't all that great in the second half, but they managed to make enough big plays to bring themselves back into the game. Didn't sound like Jared Goff was all that impressive, but they did, you know, enough guys around him made some really big plays. So I think they're a team that, you know, they're in rebuilding mode. There's no question, but they got a coach who's known for rallying his guys and having them ready to play, and how long that lasts, you know, that type of approach lasts, I don't know, but in the early going, you can see that it could have an impact on the players. It's just after a while, maybe it wears off. You know, the thing that really is interesting about this game is, you know, so they play New Orleans, and now they're coming off a guy who was with New Orleans last year, you know, and his staff, some of them. And I think that if he didn't learn anything, or, you know, if he didn't have some discussions with Sean Payton, you know, I'd be shocked about how it was they game planned against the Packers. And I would expect to see some similarities moving forward.
That's a great point. He's going to know that personnel in New Orleans quite well. You know, the other thing about Dan Campbell, he did interview for the Packers job when they eventually went to Matt LaFleur. He was in that group of candidates that interviewed. So he knows the Packers pretty well as well. And you're right. He's a fiery guy. He's got a lot of energy there in Detroit. I don't know how that, you know, it seems like they've tried everything else. Why not get a guy that's got the energy that matches the mega wattage of Detroit as a city?
Yeah, and you know, his defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, was the DB's coach for New Orleans last year. So you think he didn't take a look and see what, you know, Dennis Allen did to shut down the Packers, and that he might force them to do the exact same thing? So it's really an interesting matchup in that regard, that they're probably facing a very similar sort of scheme, and probably just a similar challenge. He may just sit back, just like the Saints did, and say, beat us with your running game, because we're not going to let you, you know, we're not going to let Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams beat us.
Isn't every team going to do that until they actually show that they have a running game? Which, I mean, they should have a running game. There's Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon in the backfield. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch, but we haven't seen it yet. I mean, they until they show it, isn't it? I mean, and yes, I imagine the Lions will drop two shell and make, you know, rush four, do a lot of the things that the Saints did. But until they show that they can actually beat that, isn't that what they're going to see every week?
Yeah, and particularly when you're facing a team that is hurt in the secondary. So, you know, the Saints were banged up in the secondary. So what did they do? They just played their safeties back. They played some man under to make sure that Devontae Adams was covered tightly, and said, you know, we're not going to worry about the run game. You know, you're going to have to beat us that way. And the Lions are in the same boat. They lost Jeff Okuda, their top cornerback, and they're starting a rookie, and they've got two rookies, you know, backups behind, you know, those two guys. So they got to protect their corners. And this, if Matt LaFleur doesn't have a game plan that says run it, run it, run it, then they're going to be in the same boat as they were last week.
Talking about Matt LaFleur's game plan, Spoon, I know that we discussed this a little bit, but I was stunned. And I get that there weren't a lot of plays, especially in the beginning of the game, that the Packers, they couldn't stay on the field offensively. The Packers defense couldn't get off the field defensively. I get that. But if you look at the staple of Matt LaFleur's offense, it is personnel groupings in and out, a lot of two back, a lot of two tight end, a lot more than the league average. It comes from the same school as Kyle Shanahan. He does the same thing in San Francisco, a lot of 12 and a lot of 21 personnel. And from the very beginning their first drive, they had 7 plays. 6 of those, and this is your script, 6 of those in 11 personnel. Your first 12 plays, your first 2 drives, this is, again, this is scripted. 75% of them, 9 out of 12 were in 11 personnel. For the game, they ran 42 snaps with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and 31 of them were in 11 personnel. It was one of the most lopsided toward having that 3-receiver look games that Matt LaFleur has had in his time as the Packers head coach. To me, they've got to get back to doing what you talk about 21 and 12. Those are running formations. Those are conducive to running the football because you've got 2 back, you got 2 tight end, an extra blocker. They've got to get back to doing what makes this offense work. It's not an offense that's built to spread it out like they did against New Orleans and just fling it across the yard.
Well, there were a couple of factors there, and one of them was that the Saints were so decimated at corner. I understand what his idea was, which was stress them at corner, make them play nickel, and force them, and which they did, was play 2-man, and you can still run out of 3 wide receivers. It's not impossible to run. In fact, you're probably running against a light box. But what I thought was, what struck me was that they got something going a little bit with A.J. Dillon, and then they just gave up on it. And I wonder, you know, as the season goes on, whether they have to pick who's the hot back at the time. And Dillon was the hot back and Aaron Jones wasn't. And maybe they needed to just stick with Dillon and pound the ball a little bit. You know, you're right. Maybe they did need to go with some more double tight ends, but maybe they could have just done that out of the 3 receiver set too. I know that they wanted to pass the ball against these guys, and on paper, it should have worked. New Orleans rushed 4 almost the entire game, and the pass protection was pretty good, but nobody could get open. So, you know, by the time it was halftime, then they were down, and that was that. I mean, they had to pass the ball. So it was, Devontae Adams described it as a weird game. I somewhat agree with that, but some of it was their own doing. They have to run the ball. For this offense to work, they got to run the ball.
That's got to be a tough choice to make, too, between Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, because the way Aaron Jones works is that he's not an automatic 4 yards or 5 yards every time. Right, he's going to get stuffed at the line of scrimmage, but you stick with him, you stick with him, you stick with him. By the fourth quarter or the first play of the second half, which has happened a couple times, he's busting off a 60, 70-yard home run. And so if you give him enough options, enough carries, at some point, he's going to have the big play. Whereas A.J. Dillon, you might not get that. You might not get that home run threat. But you're right, Spoon. He was – I mean, every time he's getting the ball, he's getting 5 yards. And that's what that offense kind of needed. So how they make that choice between the two, it's not an easy one to make.
No. It's something they have to – they're going to have to figure out every single week is which guy – I mean, that's how these two backs – you know, systems work. Which guy is the guy who's going to, help you win? I mean, look at Tampa. They used Fournette and Tony Jones and, you know, off they went. And you never know which guy is going to be really hot. Now, I really think you can't diminish your use of Aaron Jones a lot because, like you said, he's a home run threat every single time. But they got to figure out ways where they can use those guys together. And one of them can be split out and the other can be the back. And they just got to get a little more creative than they were against New Orleans.
Do they invert it? Do they use A.J. Dillon to soften the defense for Aaron Jones? And then once the defense is worn out, boom, you put the lightning on the field?
That's a good question. You know, I guess it probably depends on how a team is playing you. If that team is playing you in a soft box, I think you want Aaron Jones because he's going to get into the secondary. The safety's not up in the box. But I think when you're sort of at a stalemate on the offensive line, which is what happened against New Orleans, their front four was just playing great, then maybe you have to bring Dillon in. Then maybe he's your guy if you're getting stalemated because you know, that's what happened. He just carried people for a few extra yards, and Aaron Jones was getting stopped at the line of scrimmage. So
getting back to the Lions, Jared Goff, obviously new quarterback in town, Matthew Stafford now across in the West Coast with LA and Sean McVay, 57 passing attempts in week one. He was 38 of 57, 338 yards, three touchdowns, an interception, sacked three times, only a 92.6 rating. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Lions are not winning many games where Jared Goff throws the ball 57 times.
No.
That's not the recipe there.
No, they can't. They can't win that way. You know, he's going to be a little bit of a different quarterback, I think, in this system. I think he's going to be he's not playing in the McVay LaFleur system anymore. So I think he's probably going to be a little bit more of a pocket passer. And so there are, you know, ways to get him going. And I think he was a pocket passer in college. You know, I don't think he was this, you know, this play action guy as much. So, but you still don't want to throw him that much. That's just way too much. And they got a decent running game. You know, they got Jamal Williams, who we all know and know what type of back he is. And they have a good complement with DeAndre Swift, who's a really quick and good receiver and probably is going to have a good year this year. So, they can't throw it. But they got so far behind, you know. It was they just like Green Bay too, you know.
I'm just looking at it now, and you know, it was still with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. It was 14-10. So, you know, it was 31-10 at halftime, and it eventually went up to 38-10, and that's where you get a lot of passing attempts. But even still, it's not like they were down by three touchdowns in the first quarter. I mean, it was a game through the midway second quarter. You know, obviously the Packers are familiar with Goff. They before Sunday, Jared Goff's last game had come in Green Bay. He was 21 of 27 for 174 yards, a touchdown, sacked four times, did have a 105.9 rating, primarily because he didn't turn the ball over. But the Packers defense with Mike Pettine really bottled up Goff in that Rams offense last season for the divisional playoff game. Do they take anything that worked well from that game, Spoon, and put it into practice in week two?
Well, different offense. So I think they just want to put the pressure on Goff. I think they want to they need to shut down the run game. They need to just not allow Detroit to get anything going on the run game and see if they can – if they're good enough in the secondary, which, you know, based on last week, they're not, to defend him. And I think you got to bring some pressure. I think, you know, they let Jameis Winston just stand back there with no pressure. Joe Barry didn't bring, and you know, we know that's been a criticism of him, is that he doesn't bring much pressure. And they never got Jameis Winston off his spot. He was just, you know, he scrambled and got some big yards, but he was never really harassed. It was always, okay, nobody's open, then I'll just run through this gap in the middle. That's the times he ran. It was just coverage, not because he was being harassed.
Yeah, Jameis Winston looked awfully comfortable. There's no question about it. When you have six incomplete passes and five touchdowns, there's good reason to feel awfully comfortable. But as far as getting the pressure on Goff, again, four sacks in the playoff game last year. Rashawn Gary had a sack and a half. Kenny Clark had a sack and a half. Za'Darius Smith had a sack. And Tom, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, we got to talk about him.
I have no clue what to make of this Za'Darius Smith thing at this point. You hate to speculate. Za'Darius Smith, not available to reporters on today. This is a Friday, which is a Thursday of game week. Usually this is last season, the day of the week that Za'Darius Smith would talk. So we don't know if he'll be available Saturday. He's been requested. It is time for Za'Darius Smith to speak, because you don't want to speculate, but Tom, I have a hard time believing that a team that kept Billy Turner out for two games with a knee injury at the start of last season, to the point where he was ticked off, a team that kept Davante Adams out week four last season, and he tweeted his displeasure about the medical staff's decision because he felt like he was ready to play with that hamstring. He was upset. A team that kept Aaron Jones out after he had the Friday availability going into Houston because of a calf injury suffered that same day. And usually if you talk to the media, that's a good sign you're ready to go, and they kept him out. A team that did all that is going to then play Za'Darius Smith 18 snaps despite not practicing on a Friday, despite only having one padded practice since camp began because of a back injury. And then, he's not practicing again this week. It's hard for me to see that only being a back injury. The Packers have been adamant that's what it is. It's hard for me to see that just being about the back.
Well, if it's – okay, we don't know for sure.
No,
if
we don't.
It's, you know, what the issue is. If it's contractual, you know, that he's mad and he's not going to practice or whatever it is, he's not helping himself because they're not giving him a contract extension if he's going to, you know, if that's what he's doing. We don't know that. I mean, you can only take them by their word. But, you know, Rodgers was asked about him yesterday and about the captain thing. And what did, I guess Za'Darius Smith posted something on Instagram or he bought a bracelet or something.
A captain necklace or something like that. Captain necklace.
And so he's obviously hurt by that. And Rodgers said, well, you know, it was an election. So, you know, you have to accept that. And then each guy who's not a captain has to find his own way to lead. And I just think all the time he's spent away from the team, he's got to kind of earn his way back in, even though he's probably their second best defensive player. He's got to get on the field and show, you know, that he's in this thing. Maybe his back tightened up on him. I don't know. We'll see if he's at practice Thursday or Friday and Saturday.
Yeah,
and we played hard, you know. You can't say he didn't play hard. I don't know.
He played well. He played well. He had the roughing the passer, and Matt LaFleur said that they did hear back from the league on that play. And he wouldn't say what the league said, but he indicated that the league was very much in agreement that should not have been a roughing the passer penalty.
He did everything right on it. He did exactly absolutely what they tell you to do, which is tackle from the side and not, you know, pile drive the guy into the ground. So
my favorite part of that play was when he went up to Kenny Clark on the sideline after, and he mimicked exactly what he did, which was lead with the shoulder, not contact the head, and slide off and not land on the quarterback when taking him to the ground. Right. And then looked at Kenny Clark and said, I don't know what else to do. And you know what? He's right to be confused, but we are very confused because he played well. I thought you and I were in agreement, Tom. There's no way that he's going to play. He played 18 snaps. He played well. He made the biggest play of the game for that defense. Really the only play of the game for that defense. And then he's not practicing. Look, I'm not saying it's not the back. I don't know. I'm saying it's time for Za'Darius Smith to speak.
Right.
And say what's going on.
Yep.
Because I don't want to speculate. None of us want to speculate. But there's a lot of things here that are confusing and are not adding up and not making sense. And the only way to clear the air there is for Za'Darius Smith to do that himself, which is what a leader would do.
Yep, exactly. And he's not doing that. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. You know, maybe that's why they didn't elect him a captain. Maybe there's, you know, we saw that with Mike Daniels, you know, when he was here. He was very outspoken. He was a rah-rah guy, but the locker room didn't recognize him as that. You know, they kind of saw through some things that told him, you know, he's more bluster than he is real leadership. And now you start to wonder if that's the case with Za'Darius Smith.
You do. And so we'll see where that, I would imagine that he's going to play on Monday night. If he's going to play week one, I imagine he'll probably play week two, and we'll see where it goes from there. We'll see when he finally talks. We'd be remiss, Tom, if we didn't mention the homecoming, Jamal Williams coming back to town. And a lot of guys in that locker room feel very highly about Jamal Williams. I kind of looked at him last year, really the last few years, as kind of the joy of the team. Like, he'd always be dancing. He'd always be having a good time. Just a really happy, happy guy. Always. And, you know, he's kind of running back by committee with DeAndre Swift in Detroit now. But he's a big part of that offense as well. He had 9 carries for 54 yards, led the team in rushing, and had a rushing touchdown against the 49ers. So the Lions' leading rusher and the lone Lions player to get into the end zone on the ground, that'll be a fun matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, the Lions love him, from what I understand, and you know, there's a lot to love. He's not Aaron Jones talent wise but he's very functional. He's a really good pass blocker, he's good tough runner between the tackles, he can catch. You know, and he, I think what you said was maybe part of what the Packers were missing on Sunday was just a guy who, you know, loosens everybody up and, you know, plays in a way that is kind of contagious. You know, you can yell and scream and all that stuff, but what really, I think, inspires people is when someone plays the game as hard as he does. And they were missing that, definitely missing that on Sunday.
I think, too, the fact that he is not as talented as Aaron Jones, and that became clear fairly early on in their time together. But that could have been a really awkward situation. Jamal Williams was the 4th-round pick. And Aaron Jones was the 5th-round pick, same draft class around later. And it became clear early on. And the fact that Jamal Williams never let that become an awkward situation, and I think a lot of guys might have, their relationship was always extremely close. They've described each other like a brotherly bond. And it was never something where it was either him or me. They always were able to coexist, and they found the roles that suited themselves best in that Packers backfield without any animosity. That's the reason why he's thought so fondly of, and that's the reason why this, you know, Matt LaFleur was talking about that this week. The fact that Jamal Williams never let that stop him from being a great teammate.
Yeah. And internally, I'm sure he thought he was just as good as Aaron Jones, and that, you know, deserved every carry that he got, if not more. But he, as you said, he didn't show it, and his enthusiasm was infectious. And, you know, who knows how much they missed that on Sunday.
So we'll see if the Packers are able to show a little bit more life, a little bit more enthusiasm, maybe a little bit more joy, energy, come Monday night, week two. They've gotta, because if they overlook the Lions, this is a team that could come in and win. So, you know, Detroit has played them much tougher at home over the past few seasons. So yeah, we'll see if they're able to do that.
They have to get Aaron Rodgers going. You know, Matt LaFleur is going to have to be part of that. He's got to figure out a way to get the offense going. And then, you know, we didn't really even touch on Joe Barry and that horrendous first performance, and they got to get that secondary together. They can't keep making those mistakes that they made, and they were embarrassing going back, you know. And we got to talk about when do they give up on Kevin King and go with Eric Stokes. I mean, it's not going to be this week, I don't think, but it's something they got to keep in mind and keep wondering, when do they have to get Stokes in the lineup.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I get the sense that they're going to be real cautious, and maybe cautious, but real gradual with Eric Stokes's adaptation to the defense and his ramp up in snaps. It's not going to be something where it's one week he doesn't play much and the very next week, boom, there's a lot of snaps for him. I don't think it's going to happen in one week. I think you're going to see that kind of over time.
I think that's the plan, but I think circumstances could change that. If Kevin King's confidence is shot, or, you know, whatever, the injuries have just taken its toll and he can't run anymore, or whatever it was that happened, you know, he could not handle Deontay Harris's speed in that game, you know, then they have to fast forward with Stokes and just take their lumps early, because they're going to need someone who's really reliable at the end of the year. And, you know, he did show that his speed can make up for a lot of mistakes. It's just, there's going to be times you'd have to just live with it. Maybe they start splitting time there, you know, one series it's Stokes and one series it's King. Like I said, I don't think it'll be this week. I think they'll give Kevin King more time. You know, it was his first game back in a long time and he didn't have that much of a training camp to see what he can do. But I would wonder, I think Stokes is like in the on deck circle. You know, he's no longer in the hole. He's on the on-deck circle.
Moving on up. You know, the Packers did that whole splitting thing with Elgton Jenkins early in, you know, his career him and Lane Taylor. So it kind of reminds me of that, because guard, like corner, is a position where you never come off the field, and they did that. So I wonder if they do it on the opposite side of the ball. You know, the other thing about the defense, I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying, when you don't have a preseason, and they did not, and you're going down to Jacksonville, which they did, and you're playing a team that practices in Texas and lives in Louisiana, which the Saints do, and then you're on the field for 11 minutes in the first quarter, which they were, and then you see this before, and I tweeted the picture of this this week, when you see before the second play of the second quarter, 11 sets of hands on hips, that defense got gassed after one quarter, and you can understand why. It's the way the human body works, right? Like they were gassed, and I wonder if, you know, if that's going to make a difference. You think it's got to make a difference being in Green Bay at home, up in this climate, against a Lions team that does not live in that climate. I think it's going to make a difference.
I agree. Yeah, I think. There's no question. I mean, I don't think the Heat lost them the game, but the circumstances of that game where they couldn't get off the field, you're right. It wore them down. And, you know, I think in the same situation, you know, if it were reversed, New Orleans would have worn down too. I just think, like you said, it's human biology. And it was the Packers who couldn't get off the field. So, yeah, it'll be a little bit different on a Monday night in mid-September in Green Bay.
Didn't cost them a game. Might have had something to do with just how bad Joe Barry's debut was. And there's a lot of things that we're going to find out Monday night. That's what this week two is really about, is – how much of what happened week one is, you know, true and real, and how much of it was just a set of circumstances that were stacked against the Packers. And we'll find it's going to be a very interesting litmus test coming up. Make sure that you stay with Packers News for full coverage going into Monday Night Football and that litmus test. Until next time, he is Tom. I am Ryan. Thanks for listening, everybody.